views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio. Welcome to the hit show, Heart Center Talk Radio, with David Christopher Lewis, a gifted clairaudient, Aquarian spiritual author, and talented musical composer on TransformationTalkRadio.com. During this hit show, David will share the Ascended Master's teachings, insights, and surprising revelations to light bearers. He invites you to engage him in discussing how these living messages and living revelations are relevant to your personal spiritual quests. Get a refreshing perspective on life and meet some of the beautiful people who embody change and inspire hope. Join our sacred circle of oneness and call 1-800-930-2819 to share. Now here is your host, David Christopher Lewis.
Welcome, everyone. God bless you, and thank you for joining us today on Heart Center Talk Radio. I have a very special guest today, Greg Braden, who is a New York Times bestselling author whose work has led to amazing cutting-edge books such as The God Code, The Divine Matrix, The Spontaneous Healing of Belief, Fractal Time, Deep Truth, and his latest, The Turning Point, Creating Resilience in a Time of Extremes. Greg's work is published in 17 languages in 33 countries and really shows beyond any doubt that the key to our future lies in the wisdom of our past, which really ultimately is within our hearts and our souls. So Greg has been a former senior computer systems designer for Martin Marietta. And actually, instead of me going through the litany of his accomplishments, I'd just like to welcome Greg Braden. Thanks, Greg.
Well, David, good morning. I am thrilled, absolutely honored to be with your program today. And we were just discovered this first time we've worked together. So I want to just say thank you for keeping me in mind and inviting me on the program. We've got so many things, so many directions that we can go in today, so many things that we can talk about. My sense is that our time together is going to go by very, very quickly today, and I'm just excited to share wherever it is that we go. So I'm going to follow your lead today, David.
Okay. Well, you know, you say in your latest book that we live in a time of extremes, and it's a turning point. We've heard this term tipping point. You call it the turning point, and there really was a turning point in your life because you had kind of, you know, a corporate and scientific background. Tell us what led to this change internally.
Well, you probably know from interviewing other authors that it's very easy to talk about our work, and probably one of the hardest things to do is to talk about ourselves. So, I'll do my best from this perspective. I'll just begin. I was born in a very conservative community in northern Missouri, in the Midwest. Really good people. The conservative in their viewpoints, and science and spirituality were things that typically were not talked about commonly. And people would from time to time, but it wasn't a common topic of conversation. So I spent the bulk of my young life believing that everyone thought the same as I did when it came to science and spirituality. And my perspective has always been that they are two languages describing precisely the same thing, that there really is no separation between science and spirituality, that science tells us how the world works. It tells us the nuts and bolts of how things are put together and how they tick. And the spiritual perspectives, they acknowledge the nuts and bolts, and then they take it a step further, and they help us apply those ideas in our lives. So I believed everyone pretty much thought the same, and it wasn't until I was in the corporations, and you began mentioning in the introduction, I'm a degreed earth scientist with a background in computer science, ocean sciences, and mathematics and physics. So my corporate positions with the Phillips Petroleum, that was in the oil industry during the first energy crisis of the 1970s, and during the Cold War years with Mark Marietta. I was actually a liaison, senior liaison between the U.S. Space Command and Martin Marietta Defense in software design. I learned a lot about people and the way they think and how they think during wartime. This is during the Cold War years. I was the first tech ops manager at Cisco Systems in 1991. Working with some of the most advanced technologies that we've ever seen in the modern world. So all of these offered a perspective for me, and it wasn't until I was in these positions that I found that my childhood beliefs didn't work in the corporate world. And I was actually told that I had to make a choice, David, that I had to choose between the two paths of science and spirituality, because I could not, the words that were given to me were that I couldn't serve two masters. They said, you must follow in your heart, your mind, your thinking, your work, the path of science or the path of spirituality, and you have to make a choice, Greg. And this was interesting to me because it occurred during my tenure at in the defense industry during the Cold War, one of the most frightening times in the history, recent history of our world, when the two then superpowers, former Soviet Union and the United States, we had these nuclear arsenals that were, you know, oversized nuclear arsenals enough to microwave the Earth many times over. And my thinking was this: if we know where to look into the past and how to look into the past, we will find the insights that will help us today avoid the kinds of wars that we found ourselves in then, the 20th century, and now. So my question back to my supervisors, my superiors, was what if we don't make the choice? What if we don't choose between science or spirituality? Instead, what if we marry these two great ways of knowing into a wisdom, a single wisdom that's more than either could be individually, that's more than science by itself, it's more than spirituality by itself? Where will that lead us? Will it give us the evolutionary edge to not just survive this time of extremes, but to transcend, to become better people and create stronger communities, stronger nations, and then a better world? Where would that lead us? And it is that question that every one of my books addresses. I continue to strive to answer that today. I can answer it better today than I could when I left the corporations in 1990. And my journey has taken me into some of the most isolated, remote, pristine, beautiful, magnificent places remaining in the world today, from the monasteries of Tibet and the mountains of Egypt and the Andes of Bolivia and Peru, all through the desert southwest, here India and Nepal, through the Aboriginal traditions, looking for the wisdom that our ancestors have had that we have either forgotten or in some cases we never had. So that's a long answer to a short question, and it lays a foundation for everything that we can talk about in our program today.
Wonderful. Well, you know, there's creationism of fundamentalist Christians and there's intelligent design. And I've always felt that there is a creator and there's a type of evolution. Explain your thinking on this in terms of how, because we are aware of ancient civilizations that may have actually had technologies that are more developed in some respects than what we have today, there is a disconnect with what our history books, our geography, our social, you know, understanding is today. And you've brought a lot of this ancient knowledge back to the current world through this marrying of science and spirituality. Where do you think, you know, where is this going, and what do we need to do now to enlighten people in order to kind of quicken them to the fact that it's okay to have science and spirituality married?
Sure. Well, you just asked me four questions, David, and my sense, again, is, you know, each topic that we're talking about is important, and there's so much around it. It could be the entire program today. So I'm going to be brief, and then I'll refer our listeners to some references if they'd like that. Specifically on the question of evolution, in my 2010 book, it was called Deep Truth. I described six scientific discoveries that are based in peer-reviewed science. And for our listeners that may not be familiar with that, what it means is that the information has been researched by bona fide scientists, and once they write the papers, they submit the papers for circulation and peer review among their peers. That's where the term comes from. And it's a process where the peers will look for errors in the thinking. They'll try to poke holes in the theories. They'll really work it through. And this can take years. It can take 6, maybe 8 years for a paper to go through the peer review process. And once it has passed the peer-reviewed process, then it is published in the scientific literature as accepted scientific fact. And I'm mentioning that because that is very different than someone simply writing a paper and throwing it up on the internet, which anyone can do. And a scientist can do that. A scientist from NASA can write a document about climate change, for example, put it up on the internet. It doesn't mean it's based in fact. It doesn't mean it's peer-reviewed. And we have to be very careful where we glean our information from, because if we want to embrace and be able to thrive in the changes, I think it's important to be truthful, factual, and honest with ourselves. So peer-reviewed science is telling us there's a problem with the Darwinian thinking of evolution. And the problem is the data simply does not support Darwin's theory. Darwin believed that life began as a single cell and has evolved into more complex forms over long periods of time. As a geologist, what I can say is that I've seen evolution in the fossil record. It is a fact for some forms of life. Where it breaks down is when it comes to humans. We don't fit that evolutionary pattern. We showed up on Earth about 200,000 years ago. We simply appeared. And the mystery is how that happened. Since that time, if you were to take a skeleton of a modern human today and compare it to a human 200,000 years ago, except for a little bit thicker leg bones, presumably because they walked and ran more than we do, you couldn't tell us apart. Our body proportions are the same. Brain capacity is the same. Cranial capacity is the same. That's not Darwinian evolution. So something happened 200,000 years ago that cannot be explained by evolution. Now that we know about DNA, the DNA is telling us that the DNA that allows us the characteristics that set us apart from other forms of life, specifically, and where scientists are really looking, is a very mysterious chromosome number 2 in the human genome. The way that chromosome number 2 has formed, it's called a telomere-to-telomere fusion. Two ancestral forms of DNA fused in a way that our own geneticists say cannot happen under natural causes. So it's not a product of nature or evolution. We don't know what it is, but something caused that DNA to fuse in the way that has led to the lineage of us and who we are today. So when we talk about terms, I think this is where we get into trouble. I'm not a creationist. I'm not an evolutionist. I believe that something along the lines of what I would call directed evolution has occurred. There was some event that triggered the fusing of the DNA, and from that time, we certainly have evolved, I think, emotionally, probably spiritually, but we can't tell that for sure. But the physical evolution, as Darwin laid it out, doesn't fit for humans. It doesn't fit the model. And this is part of the problem, David. You know, science, I'm a scientist. I think science is good. I believe in it. I think our world is better in many cases because of it. And science does not have all the answers. And I think in many cases we expect too much from science. As I mentioned earlier, all science can do is tell us how things work. But today science has been hijacked by corporations, by politics, by religions. And everyone's trying to use science to support their ideas rather than allowing science simply to tell us what is. And that is precisely what has happened with this conversation of evolution. So 1859, Charles Darwin published his first book. It was titled The Origin of Species by Means of Natural Selection. That was the title on the cover of the book. There's more of a title on the inside. And what he did was he laid out a theory of how he believed life began. And he was trying to move the world away from strictly adhering to the church principles. And Darwin himself said, he goes, this is only a first step. He said, this is my theory. He said, the moment we find evidence that doesn't support my theory falls apart, and a new theory will take its place. So Darwin was willing for his theories to be replaced with others. What's happened today is that politics, in many cases religion, are not allowing the science to reveal the process. What they're doing is trying to make the discoveries fit into a pre-existing idea, and this is where we get into trouble. So this is one example of these six principles. There are any civilization, any spiritual tradition, any religion, any club, any culture that asks people to follow them and trust them must gain the trust of people by answering six fundamental questions. They're called the perennial questions of science. And I'll just run through them very, very quickly. The six questions, they begin with the most basic question that we've just talked about. What is the origin of life? Where does life come from? That's the first perennial question. The second is, what is the origin of human life? Because human life may have a different origin than life in general. The third question is about relationships. What is our relationship to our bodies? Are we separate and powerless when it comes to healing and the way our bodies function and longevity, the quality of life, the power of our immune system, anti-aging, or are we somehow deeply connected with these processes? The next question is, what is our relationship to the world around our bodies? Are we completely separate and powerless victims of whatever happens in the world, or are we somehow connected to those events? Can we influence them? Not control, but can we influence them? The next question is, what is our relationship to the past? Have there been cyclic technological civilizations, advanced civilizations in the past, or is history linear? Did it start primitive and build to where we are today? And the last question, number six, is what is the fundamental rule of nature? And this harkens back to Darwin's ideas. Is nature based upon competition and conflict, as we've been taught, or is it based upon something else? These are the six perennial questions. In the book Deep Truth, I talk about these, and I'll just say right now, for our listeners taking notes, if you are taking notes, we've been taught that the origin of life is random, the origin of human life is random, our relationship to our body is that we're separate and powerless, our relationship to the world is that we're separate and powerless, our relationship to the past is that history is linear, and that nature is, in fact, based in competition and conflict. If you're taking notes, put a big X through every one of those, because peer-reviewed scientific fact accepted in the scientific community, the real scientists, not pop scientists that you're going to see maybe on, you know, on some cable network or something like that. Real peer-reviewed science has overturned every one of those ideas, 150 years of scientific thinking, and now tells us that the origin of life is not random, the origin of human life is not random, that we're deeply connected to our bodies through thoughts, feelings, emotions, and beliefs that change the chemistry in our bodies. We're deeply connected to the world beyond our bodies in a similar way. That our past is cyclic, and there have been advanced technological civilizations extending at least back into the last ice age, and we can learn from them and apply what they knew to our lives today. And here's the big one, David, is that our own science now is telling us that while we all know that competition happens in nature, it's not the fundamental rule. The fundamental rule is based on cooperation. Nature is based upon cooperation in what biology calls mutual aid. And when we embrace these new deep truths in our lives and our world, it changes the way we think of ourselves and one another and the way we solve the problems that we're looking at today, because many of the problems of the world, from economics to world peace, the principles are based in the false assumptions of separation, and they're no longer working because they're unsustainable. So Just briefly, I wanted to run through those. You asked about evolution. That was a specific example, and we talked about that, of one of these six principles in what are called the false assumptions of science. So once we embrace these, it changes the way we think of ourselves and our relationship to the world, and then that changes everything.
Wonderful, Greg. Well, I remember watching a video on YouTube of you, and you said that the key for now and in the future is to have those who can really synthesize a lot of information and take all the disparate individual instances of things that are going on and really be able to facilitate this new awareness of community. And I remember watching, you know, you along with a wonderful another author, Biology of Belief, and he said the world is falling apart right on schedule. and he shared, and you know, right after you spoke, Bruce Lipton talked about the next point in our evolution is really community, because we've kind of, you know, rubbed up against this problem in humanity right now. We're not totally getting along, and in order to have planetary peace and to resolve conflicts and move beyond this, you know, this turning point and have resilience, we have to have community. So can you speak on what you've observed in the world as you traveled to many nations about how we can form spiritual community and what are the dynamics of that?
Sure. Well, the quote that you, I think, were probably referencing, it's from a man that I have tremendous respect and admiration for. He's a living scientist today. His name is E.O. Wilson. And what E.O. Wilson said, there's two statements, and each of them are equally powerful, and it was all in part of the same conversation. What he said was that, number one, we are drowning in information while starving for wisdom. And I think that is so true. There's so much information out there. Our job is to know how to take that information and weave it into something meaningful in a healthy way in our lives. And he went on to say that from this point forward, the world is going to be run by people that he calls synthesizers. And the synthesizers are those people who are able to put together just the right information at just the right time, think critically about it, and make important choices wisely. And I think that's where all of us are in our lives and in our world today. And the reason, the context is everything. The very top of this hour, you opened and you used a word, and we never defined it. And it's a word that's important in my work, and that is that we are living a time of extremes. So I'd just like to clarify what that means, because that will be the segue into the next part of our conversation. I think I'll just speak directly to our listeners. Listeners, if you're listening to us today, I know that you know that something is up in the world. This is no ordinary time. Certainly in the history of our nation, if you're listening to this in America, or in any nation, if you're listening to it anywhere in the world, it's no ordinary time in the history of our world. And I want you to know it's not your imagination. Some people say, well, maybe it's just because we know more through the Internet of everything that's happening. Maybe it was always happening, or we're just aware of it now. What the experts are telling us is that's not the case. And the experts are telling us that we are, in fact, living what's being called a time of extremes. So the time of extremes doesn't necessarily mean only bad things are happening, or even that good things are happening. But what it does mean is that big things are happening. And I think we all sense that big changes in the world. And what that has to mean is that big changes are happening in our lives. And that's why this is important. Our world, in fact, is changing in ways that we simply have never seen. We're not used to the kind of change that we're seeing. And our nervous systems are not used to the kind of stress that the change is causing. We're not wired to see the horrific images of the atrocities that are being committed against humans on our television sets and on you know, you fire up your computer and it's on the Internet. We're not used to seeing those things. Our lives are changing in ways that we're not used to. For most of us, it's happening faster than we've been prepared to accept. And that means that right now, more than perhaps any time in the past, we've got to think and live differently than we ever have before. even though we learn to think and live one way earlier in our lives to get us where we are now, the conditions have changed, and so we've got to change with those conditions. And that is the theme of the newest book, The Turning Point, Creating Resilience in a Time of Extremes. So I just wanted to identify what we mean by those extremes. So whether we're talking about climate change or social change, or whether we're talking about peak oil or peak debt, we're all experiencing this very rapid, accelerated change in our lives. The program, I'm not sure which one you were watching, but I often co-present with a dear spiritual brother, a friend of mine, a colleague. I've known him for over 20 years, Dr. Bruce Lipton. He is a biologist. He wrote the book, The Biology of Belief, that I think was published, I believe it was 2008, right around in there. And it was during one of those conferences. We co-present because it makes sense from our different perspectives. He's looking at the biology of life. I'm looking at the big changes in the world and big systems kinds of changes.
Hey, Greg, I'm going to have to interrupt you. I'm really sorry to interrupt you. We're at the half hour where we have a three-minute break for commercials. You're listening to Greg Braden, my guest today. I'm David Christopher Lewis. This is Heart Center Talk Radio. We'd like to talk a lot more after the intermission, and you can also call if you have a question for Greg, 1-800-930-2819. Again, 1-800-930-2819. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
Got attitude? Keys to the rescue. Adjust your attitude with Keys Clear Protein Waters. So refreshing. Just a few sips of Keys will give you a whole new outlook, thanks to 22 grams of the happiest protein on earth. Tongue-tingling tasty without the guilt of naughty or nasty ingredients. If that doesn't put a smile on your face, maybe you need to drink too. Put a little woohoo in your attitude with Keys Protein Water. On Amazon or at Keys, K-E-E-S, please.com.
Call the Oprah of Radio by her listeners. Award-winning host Dr. Pat Basile is blowing the doors off of traditional talk radio. Get ready for an energizing delivery and powerful interviews with leaders in the field of human potential. Dr. Pat's fresh, new perspective on living life full out has catapulted her show to the top of talk radio. Tune in and Dr. Pat will help you thrive instead of merely survive. Visit thedrpatshow.com. That's thedrpatshow.com for listening times in your area.
Tune in to Sheer Alchemy with Leslie Fontaine on TransformationTalkRadio.com and get ready to stir up your passions, identify your blocks, and shift into an entirely new existence. Leslie Fontaine is a transformation catalyst and clairvoyant who uses her intuitive and energetic gifts to catapult listeners into living the life they were born to live. Whether it's shifting from scarcity to abundance, from emotional pain into joy, or from illness into health, Leslie will help you step into the true essence and power of all that you are with the help of the Ascended Masters and Archangels. You will not be the same. Visit TransformationTalkRadio.com for show dates and times and LeslieFontaine.com to say yes to explosive abundance.
The Read of a Lifetime, Advanced Studies of the Human Aura by David Christopher Lewis, overflows with new vital revelations to enlighten your mind and transform your world. Learn to supercharge your aura with rainbow-colored radiance and magnetize your heart's highest desires. Advanced Studies of the Human Aura. It will change how you see yourself. Advanced Studies of the Human Aura by David Christopher Lewis. Order it today at davidclewisbook.org.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm David Christopher Lewis. You're listening to Heart Center Talk Radio. My guest is Greg Braden. And by the way, please check out his website, gregbraden.com. And it's He's got three G's in his name, G-R-E-G-G, Braden.com. And you'll see all the events coming up. Greg's going to be in Virginia Beach, Virginia, the home of the ARE and Edgar Cayce's wonderful group, February 27th through March 1st, The Turning Point, Prophecy and Revelations of the Future. He's going to be back in Sedona, Arizona, near, a place near and dear to his heart since he lives in New Mexico, close by, March 6th through 8th, with Joe Dispenza, and an unforgettable retreat in beautiful Sedona. He's going to be in El Dorado Hills, California, April 3rd, talking about, wow, the Shroud of Turin. I'm really intrigued with that. Cancun, Mexico, for a six-day healing retreat, April 8th through 13th in Cancun. And then Calgary, Alberta, Barcelona, Spain, Lisbon, Portugal, back to Sedona, and you name it. Greg is a world traveler, and he has a lot to offer. Please take advantage of some of his sharings and read as many of his books. Greg, how many books do you have now? Is it like 11 or 17? Or?
Well, in this genre, there are 11 books, and I'm listening to the schedule. You know my schedule better than I do. What I do know is that's in the first 6 months of this year. That leaves me getting into the second half of the year.
Yeah, so please check out his website. Sign up for one of the events. Go see him in person because the power of his presence is transformational. You will be infused with this deep truth that he conveys and shares with the world. And I can guarantee, just from my own experience of reading his books and witnessing what he does, that it will be a turning point in your life. So please check it out. Now, we were talking before the break, Greg, about community, and you were kind of moving toward sharing a little bit about that. So go ahead from that point.
Well, this is the reason it was important to talk about those six principles of that are now being called the false assumptions of science, is the new discoveries are telling us very clearly that the general theme of our thinking needs to change. We have been steeped in the modern world, in the Western world, in the last 150 years, in a story of separation. So we've been taught that we're separate from our own bodies, that we're separate from the world beyond our bodies, that we live in a world, nature based in competition and conflict. And I've, as you mentioned, I've been all over the world, and I've shared this with audiences all over the world. And they often have a very similar question when they come to understand this. And the question is, okay, Greg, we got it. Maybe science didn't get it quite right. Maybe Darwin wasn't quite right. What difference does it make in our lives? You know, so what? This is the 21st century. Darwin was 1859. Why is that important to us now? And it's a really, really good question. And the answer surprises a lot of people. And the answer is simply this, that Darwin put forth these ideas of separation, conflict, competition in the mid to late 1800s, and that is the time that the foundation of Western society as we know it today was being built. That is the time that the business was being built the way it is, the economies were being built, that governments were being formed, that ways of life were being anchored. So because Darwin was a scientist, his work was embraced very quickly, and it wasn't critically scrutinized, and it became deeply entrenched into the way we think. So we think in terms of competition and separation. It's reflected in the economy of the world that is now buckling and collapsing in some places. It's reflected in the corporate models that are also in trouble right now. It's reflected in the way that we solve our problems, whether we're talking about the Middle East or we're talking about Africa or what's happening in Eastern Europe, whether we're talking about the way we share disappearing vital resources like food and water, medicine, things like that. As different as they are from one another, they're all based in these ideas that we embraced of competition and conflict. Now that those systems have become unsustainable. It's not that they're good, bad, right, or wrong. They're simply not sustainable because they're not based on the truth, on the facts of what nature is really all about. We have the opportunity to shift into sustainable ways of thinking and living, whether we're solving those problems in the Middle East or whether we're solving the problems of medicine and food and how those things are shared, or economies. And this is affecting everyone. Everyone listening, it's affecting the IRAs that you're counting on for your kids' college education, your savings, your retirement, how many hours you have to work, the price you're paying for food. It's all reflected. These false assumptions are all being reflected in these ideas. So the science is telling us that this shift away from separation toward connection is what is due right now, what's in store for us. We are deeply connected to our bodies and to our world, and based a world based upon cooperation. That gives us reasons to look at the way we live our lives differently. Now, one of the I mentioned earlier, I've believed for most of my adult life that if I could find the places in ancient traditions, in many of the indigenous traditions surviving today, if I could find those places that had been least disturbed by the modern world, that I would find the wisdom most intact that we could apply in our lives today. And that is what has taken me on this journey of the places that I mentioned earlier, in the monasteries and in the villages and the high mountains and in the deserts. And one of the common themes I've found is, and that was the preface now to the answer to your question, one of the common themes that I've found from our past and with indigenous people living today that survive tremendous change is the principle of community. So essentially what that means is that they decentralize the way that they live and become more localized in their living. And in localized living, we are much more resilient. They are much more resilient to the big changes in our in their lives. And my sense is that the same is applying to us as well. So when I talk about localized living, some of these principles are very well known in the open media today. Localized food, for example, organic food, it's called farm to table in many communities, where the food is literally grown within blocks or just a couple of miles from the restaurants and the markets that are selling them. It's not shipped, on a 747 across two oceans, you know, from halfway around the world with a huge carbon footprint, that the economy is localized, that they're not dependent on the business that's happening in a big city, you know, halfway across the country or even halfway across the state for that matter. And I can give some concrete examples of this, but this idea of localized living rather than centralized living, energy and power is a perfect example. Today, our power grids here in North America are based on big power plants that spend the power out over a power grid and high-tension power lines across multiple states in some instances, and the same with energy. Decentralizing is key. It's important any time. In our time of extremes, I think it's vital because the extremes are taxing a system of centralized living that is unsustainable. So can I give a couple of examples just to illustrate those points?
I was actually going to mention Damanhur in Italy. I interviewed Crotalo Sesimo, who's kind of an ambassador for them. They even have their own form of money, and Finhorn in Scotland. You know, those are amazing communities that basically are pretty self-sufficient. They have their own economy. But go ahead with whatever you would like to share.
Well, they are. I was just in Damanhur about 6 months ago. And for our listeners that may not be familiar, it is a self-sufficient, self-sustaining community, one of the most successful communities that's been around since, the ideas began late 60s, and it was in the 70s when it was actually built, and actually kept secret from the world until it was discovered. And the government now supports this community in preserving what they've created, because the Italian government recognizes how critical it is. It's about 600 people living in this community, but they interface with the greater communities. But here in the United States, there's a community in northern Arizona, 5,000 people, produce all their own electricity, grow all their own food. They have 100% employment rate because everyone that wants to work works supporting the systems that grow the food and produce the electricity. So these aren't just theories. I mean, we know these things work. I just wanted to share a couple of examples of localized thinking. Living here in northern New Mexico, we've had the opportunity to see some of these principles in action. Northern New Mexico, it's one of the most with the least populated states in the nation. Just a little under about between 1.5 million, 2 million people live in the entire state. And New Mexico has been hit particularly hard, both from the economy and from the change in the climate. Farmers and ranchers aren't able to sustain their crops and their herds the way they have, you know, for 300 years. So it was the winter of 2012, I believe, 2012 or 2013, and a perfect example of the downside of centralized power occurred here. The natural gas that people rely upon to heat their homes, to cook, to keep their many of the ranchers rely on natural gas to keep the herds, the water from freezing in the outdoor troughs. To keep the chickens, people that are raising chickens, they heat their chicken, the coops with natural gas. It was the coldest winter on record, and it was in the middle of January, and there was a problem with the natural gas lines. They're supplied out of North Texas.
Wow.
Something happened, and the valves were shut off, and there was no gas coming into northern New Mexico for weeks. It wasn't just a few hours or a couple of days. It was weeks. They could not get this thing figured out. People, homes were flooded when the pipes froze and broke. People, elderly people, were suffering from the cold. There were animals that died because of the cold. Insurance companies, it was a mess. And people in northern New Mexico said, we'll never let this happen again. We're not going to rely upon this centralized gas the way we have in the past. And it was the impetus for more localized living, the localized forms of heat. And, of course, you know, New Mexico is great for solar and other alternative forms. But the point is the centralized system, when it was taxed by extremes, was not able to perform it, and people suffered. So another example, there are
so
people...
new thinking has to intercede, and we people have to become resilient by realizing that there's other options.
Exactly, and I want to give a perfect example of that. So I laid the foundation. The economy and the climate have changed the way people are living. A friend of mine was a builder of high-end, sustainable, beautiful green homes for many years here in the Southwest. And he had a crew of about 30, 35 people working with him, really did beautiful work, and had just taken on the largest housing project of his career. It all looked good, except the year that he did all this was the year 2008, when not only the economic markets were collapsing, but the housing markets were collapsing. And my friend found himself he was out of a job. He couldn't support his family. He couldn't support the workers anymore. Now, this is why we laid the foundation for this early in this program. In the old way of thinking, based upon competition and conflict, when we lose a job, what we typically do is we try to recreate what we know, what's familiar, somewhere else. We say, where can I go to do what I already know how to do? That's not working for a lot of people these days. My friend's name is Ken. And what Ken did, when he tells the story, he said he bolted up out of a sound sleep in the middle of the night. And there was a question that he was on his lips. He was actually mouthing the words to a question from when he woke up from this sleep. And he didn't say, how can I recreate what I've already learned to do? He asked the question, what do my friends, what does my community, what does my family need? And that is a really powerful question. He didn't say, how can I make this work for me? He said, what do people need? And the answer was they need to take care of themselves and feed themselves. The next morning, he woke up, and he began to design, prototype, and build an innovative system of raised beds, self-watering, self-heating, covered greenhouses that can be as small as 12 inches square for a high-rise patio in New York City where there's no land for people to build on, or as large as 4 feet by 8 feet in and have multiple greenhouses in series. We have these here just outside of Santa Fe. And Ken began to build and install these things. He is so successful in his new endeavors, his new business. He's had to hire more people. He's happier. He loves getting up in the morning, helping people to grow their own food. He's healthier. It's less stress. And he'll never go back to building homes because he's doing so much better with what he's doing now. Here's the key. He embraced the fact that the world is based upon cooperation and community rather than separation and the way we've been led to believe in the past. In the world of separation, we've all been taught to ask the question, what's in it for me? What can I get from the world that exists? So that's subconsciously or consciously, before we enter into a relationship with a job or a significant partner, before healthcare decisions, we're always saying, what can I get from the world that exists? The new discoveries now give us the reason to change and ask a new question. What can I give? What can I share? What can I offer? What can I contribute to the world that exists? And that subtle shift that Ken made in his thinking has led him to thrive in the worst economic downturn that we've seen in 70 years here in northern New Mexico and be able to help other people. And all he did was change the question. That is an example of resilience, a form of resilience, and his recognition that community is important. Is when people are able to become self-sufficient to the degree where they can take care of themselves and sometimes even care for others, growing their food locally rather than relying on it to be trucked in or shipped in or flown in from somewhere else. That is the principle that I wanted to illustrate here.
Thanks, Greg. Well, my wife and I began a nonprofit, Paradise Permaculture, and we teach permaculture, and we've got a great team, and we have developed a demonstration site on our 6 acres here just outside of Livingston, and we've got all kinds of wonderful projects, and it's really bringing people together to share their gifts and talents and develop new ideas for what the community does require. And whether it's building little boxes and changing lawns into gardens or whatever it is, you know, it just gets people excited. And I'm really grateful to hear that story. We did have a couple callers on the line. I don't know if they're still there, Brian. Are any of the callers still there?
Yes.
Go ahead, then.
This is Kathleen. You're on the air.
Kathleen from Ohio. Go ahead.
Yes, hi. I want to thank both Greg and David for this interview. I have listened to, I've been aware of David for a number of years and the teachings coming through his organization. I've also explored Greg through YouTube, and I've also recently read your book, even though it's one of your older books, The God Code.
Oh, yeah.
And I was utterly amazed when I looked at this thing and how you managed to tie in the Hebrew and Arabic alphabets and with the periodic table, the elements, is it the ancient Hebrew Bible you're using?
Well, this is Catholic First. Thank you for calling, and please give my very best to all of our friends in Ohio. What you're referencing was written in 2004, and I'll just say this. It was an example of what can be accomplished when we cross the traditional boundaries between science and spirituality. And the thesis of this book was I followed the instructions in a 3,000-year-old text that tell us how our bodies were formed. It's a very mysterious text. It's only been translated once into English. And
Is that the state where you had zero?
Paralleled that with the science of the periodic table, linking alphabets to letters, and when I followed those instructions, it revealed that there is literally in the first layer of the DNA of all life a message that can be read like the letters on the page of a book, and that message literally says the words "God eternal within the body." God eternal within the body. So I'm a scientist. I don't know how that got there. I don't know why it's there. I know when I follow that 3,000-year-old text, the instructions, and marry that with what we know today of the elements in the periodic table and atomic weights, this is what happens. And so the question is, what else can we learn about ourselves and the world by marrying these two great ways of knowing? So
yeah, and
thank you.
We
thank
all...
For reading and for supporting that.
Thank you, Kathleen. We're nearing the end of our time together, and I just wanted to get in this little plug for the Heart Center, which is sponsoring this show. HeartCenter.org is our website, and also HeartCenterTalkRadio.org. And I will be delivering a series of 12 discourses beginning on March 22nd. Right around the spring equinox, sponsored by and overshined by a divine being named Melchizedek, who really is invested in the enlightenment of mankind. And, you know, you may have read in the Bible that Jesus was of the priesthood of Melchizedek. Well, I consider Greg a priest of light and of the sacred fire, and I remember him teaching about the Essene mirrors. And go onto YouTube and check out a lot that Greg has done, because... You know, even though he's got a scientific background, there's a lot of spiritual truth there. You will have shifts in your awareness when you are kind of in presence, in your heart, heart-centered, and just kind of listen from the heart, and you will truly be amazed at what can be a transformation within you. So you can go to heartcenter.org, check this out, and we have a spring equinox class in Livingston, Montana, sponsored by Beloved Jesus and Melchizedek, and my new book, Saint Germain on Advanced Alchemy, Hearts Dreaming in the Aquarian Age, is coming out during that conference. It'll be released on the 19th of March, and I share a lot about what Hearts Dreaming is. So, Greg, in closing today for about 2 minutes, just what would you like to share with our audience today of what you've learned and what you think we require to develop spiritually right now?
And I have 2 minutes, is that right?
Yeah, we just have 2 minutes.
You know, we've covered a lot of ground today, and for some people it's familiar ground, and for some people maybe listening for the first time, it's new. And some of the things, you know, they sound, if you've never heard these things before, you certainly say, what's going on? I want to know more about these things. What I'd like to say to our listeners today is we are living this time of extremes, and there's no doubt in my mind that that is a fact. But I also want to say I'm an optimist and a realist. I've never been more optimistic about our world, about our nation, about our lives. And the reason is because now we know what does not work. And when things don't work, that is the opening for new ways of thinking and living. There's never been a better time to explore and embrace new ways of thinking and living. The realist in me also knows that it's going to take a lot of work. I'm under no illusion of the amount of work that's going to take. So what I'd like to leave our listeners with is this. My experience is that when the facts are clear, our choices in life become obvious. When the facts are clear, our choices become obvious. It's when we're asked or mandated to do something that does not make sense to us. That's where the struggle comes from. If it doesn't make sense, then we don't know how it fits or where it fits into our lives. So I'm going to invite everyone to due diligence, do your work, and be very discerning about the information that's coming to you from the Internet and all of your sources. And when you find the facts, I think you'll find the path to create really positive, healthy change in your life. So
Greg,
I appreciate that, Dave. Thank you so much.
God bless you, and thank you, listening audience. It's been wonderful to be with Greg. Stay tuned for what's next on this program, and thank you, Brian, for facilitating us at the AV station. Take care.
You've been listening to Heart Center Talk Radio with David Christopher Lewis. Tune into this hit show every Wednesday, 9 a.m. Pacific Time, 12 p.m. Eastern Time on TransformationTalkRadio.com as David shares received messages from the angels, masters, and divine beings and touches on progressive revelations for today on diverse topics including divine science, advanced alchemy, cosmic solar awareness, the new blue wave, abundance and healing. Get a refreshing perspective on life and meet some of the beautiful people who embody change and inspire hope. For more information and to contact David, visit HeartCenterTalkRadio.org or call 360-894-4410. See you next week.
The Read of a Lifetime. Advanced Studies of the Human Aura by David Christopher Lewis overflows with new vital revelations to enlighten your mind and transform your world. Learn to supercharge your aura with rainbow-colored radiance and magnetize your heart's highest desires. Advanced Studies of the Human Aura. It will change how you see yourself. Advanced Studies of the Human Aura by David Christopher Lewis. Order it today at davidclewisbook.org.
You got attitude? Keys to the rescue. Adjust your attitude with Keys Clear Protein Waters. So refreshing. Just a few sips of Keys will give you a whole new outlook, thanks to 22 grams of the happiest protein on earth. Tongue-tingling tasty without the guilt of naughty or nasty ingredients. If that doesn't put a smile on your face, maybe you need to drink too. Put a little woohoo in your attitude with Keys Protein Water. On Amazon or at Keys, K-E-E-S, please.com.
Called the Oprah of Radio by her listeners, award-winning host Dr. Pat Basile is blowing the doors off of traditional talk radio. Get ready for an energizing delivery and powerful interviews with leaders in the field of human potential. Dr. Pat's fresh, new perspective on living life full out has catapulted her show to the top of talk radio. Tune in and Dr. Pat will help you thrive instead of merely survive. Visit thedrpatshow.com. That's thedrpatshow.com for listening times in your area.
Tune in to Sheer Alchemy with Leslie Fontaine on TransformationTalkRadio.com and get ready to stir up your passions, identify your blocks, and shift into an entirely new existence. Leslie Fontaine is a transformation catalyst and clairvoyant who uses her intuitive and energetic gifts to catapult listeners into living the life they were born to live. Whether it's shifting from scarcity to abundance, from emotional pain into joy, or from illness into health, Leslie will help you step into the true essence and power of all that you are with the help of the Ascended Masters and Archangels. You will not be the same. Visit TransformationTalkRadio.com for show dates and times and LeslieFontaine.com to say yes to explosive abundance.
The Read of a Lifetime. Advanced Studies of the Human Aura by David Christopher Lewis overflows with new vital revelations to enlighten your mind and transform your world. Learn to supercharge your aura with rainbow-colored radiance and magnetize your heart's highest desires. Advanced Studies of the Human Aura. It will change how you see yourself. Advanced Studies of the Human Aura by David Christopher Lewis. Order it today at davidclewisbook.org.
Called the Oprah of Radio by her listeners, award-winning host Dr. Pat Basile is blowing the doors off of traditional talk radio. Get ready for an energizing delivery and powerful interviews with leaders in the field of human potential. Dr. Pat's fresh, new perspective on living life full out has catapulted her show to the top of talk radio. Tune in and Dr. Pat will help you thrive instead of merely survive. Visit thedrpatshow.com. That's thedrpatshow.com for listening times in your area.
Tune in each Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 Eastern Time on Transformation Talk Radio to Limelight Radio with Katina Macris. This is an inspirational, cutting-edge radio show educating worldwide listeners on a diversity of Lyme disease-related topics. Each week, Katina will interview some of the world's leaders in health, wellness, spirituality, and human potential. For more information, visit LimeLightRadio.com.